Hello, this is The Link Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com in channel pound Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
And we're back.
It's The Linux Show for Tuesday, October the 14th, 2003, broadcasting to you live from Chicago. Officially tonight, we're calling it the home of the Chicago Cubs. Looks like they're on their way, at least apparently on their way, to clinching their first pennant since the 1940s. They're doing very well tonight. The pitching is holding up real good. They're leading 1-0 right at the moment. Of course, anything can happen, but things are looking good here in Chicago. It's going to be an exciting night. They have already got National Guard people lining the streets of the bar district in Chicago to make sure that the fans don't tear down the city in the post-game celebration. But things are definitely, without question, really crazy here in Chicago. But still, we're going to bring you a regular edition of the Linux Show tonight, at least the best we can. It will be a truncated version. If you do hear noise in the background, that's because there's a bunch of people in my house watching the Cubs game. And we're going to hopefully get out of here in about 45 minutes tonight so that I can see if I can catch at least some of the game. But we'll see how things go. Still waiting for Arnie and Doc to call in. Doc is probably a doubtful for tonight's show. Doc is in transit right at the moment. He was supposed to land. If he would have been on his original schedule, he should have been landing right at about now, but his plane was delayed and getting off. So as sometimes happens with Doc, he's in midair. And at the cost of $5 a minute for Skyphone, I think he's going to take a pass tonight on the show. But we'll see. You never know when Doc's going to call in, or anybody from that matter. So we'll keep an eye out for Doc and Arnie. But Russ, you're in there. How are you doing tonight?
Well, I'll tell you, I think we're feeling the effects of the Cubs here in the greater D.C. area because apparently the rain that must have been in Chicago is blowing in here, and they're talking about 30-35 mile an hour winds and thunderstorms tonight, which is really weird weather for this time of year.
Yeah, we're having our share of that weird weather here. It's obviously very cold in hell.
Well, yeah, it's obvious that the Cub success is beginning to tear apart the forces of nature. So we're hopefully surviving. But other than that, things are chunking along.
Yeah, Yankees just won tonight, so they got one more game to go, maybe two, I suppose. Shouldn't count the Red Sox out, boy, they're a Cinderella story in their own right, but we'll see how that goes. That would be really exciting to see two, real hard luck teams, the Cubs and Boston, both in the World Series. That would be really something amazing.
Well, it would be truly amazing, too, when the series is over and they both have lost. That'll be one for the record books.
That would be.
Although, who did the Cubs play in 45? Was that the Yankees?
Kevin, I really don't know. I have no clue.
I think it might have been, which would be interesting.
Yeah.
Replay only about 60 years later.
Yeah. But while we're waiting for Doc and Arnie, or at least Arnie, we'll go ahead and do a couple of updates on some things that are going to be coming up here at the Linux Show. A little time for some housekeeping announcements. For those of you who are out there who are regulars of the show, we're going to be posting up to our website very shortly a call for support. And in this particular case, we're not looking for people's money. We're actually looking for their help in a physical way. The Linux Show has hooked up in the last couple of days with an organization, and we're going to be planning a series of Linux events, mini conferences that will be held primarily in the Chicago area. We're going to spread them out across the Chicago area. It might go as far north as Milwaukee, but we probably, about the farthest south we may go with this, St. Louis, and that's going to be about it. It's going to definitely be within, let's say, within a 1 day's drive of the Chicago marketplace. But we're going to be sponsoring during the course of the next 6 months a series of little mini conferences. We just, as I said, got hooked up with an organization today that's sponsoring or co-sponsoring the events here in Chicago. So what we're really looking to do is for those of you who are out there listening to the show or even those who pick it up on the rebroadcast during the course of the week, is talk to your lug about this. If you are within, oh, let's say 150 miles of Chicago and would like to get involved in planning a conference on Linux and seeing some major speakers, people like Eric Raymond and Doc and other people that are regularly on this show, if you'd like to actually meet with them and meet with them in extended periods of time in an actual presentation environments at a conference, we could certainly use your help putting the programs together. I think the best way for us to approach this, the most expeditious way of finding impassioned volunteers is for us to tap into the local Midwest LUG community. So if you're listening and you're a member of a LUG, please talk it up within your local LUGs and contact us back here at The Linux Show at staff@thelinuxshow.com. For those of you who are outside of the Chicago area, we will be shortly putting out our information. Probably it will be out the last week of October, our information on 2004 and times and weekends that we will be available for doing traveling road shows to various events. So again, if you've got a LUG in Florida or Utah or wherever, and you would be interested in hosting a couple of the people from the Linux Show crew for your event, we would certainly consider coming to your event, and all the information of what we need to pull it off will be posted at the website within the next week or two. So we love to come and go to people's parties, that's for sure. I have a lot of fun doing that. And it certainly appears that 2004, I was telling Les this before the show started up, it seems like 2004 is going to be a pretty good year for us to be traveling around. The last year, 2003, the budgets of the sponsors have been really, really tight, and there has not been an abundance of traveling funds available from the sponsors that normally sponsor us, and things seem to be turning around. So we'll again put that information up on the site and get back to you in future shows with more information about what's going on with our 2004 traveling schedule. So let's go ahead and jump on into segment number one while we're waiting for the other guys to come in here. Well, Russ, it looks like I'm going to have to go to you because Arnie and Doc aren't here. But you do have a bunch of stories linked up on the site, so why don't you pick one of them off and we'll start talking about it.
All righty. First one, as Jeff said, is on the website over at news.com. There is a new Linux player out there called Linair, and Linair is taking, a different way of trying to handle making money in the Linux world, and one, as the article says, it seems a little bit reminiscent of the dot-coms in that they have a low-cost Linair Linux software distribution, which I'm trying to get a copy of at this point. They have a very low-cost Linux-based PC for $199, and they are now going to be supposedly hosting a new email service so that you can get a Linux.net address. You know, these are the sorts of things that you kind of half expected to see about 4 years ago, but they're trying to hit low and make money, and we'll see what happens to them. But it's an interesting play. I mean, it certainly I think will get them noticed inside at some level, whether or not.
It is interesting. I've sent them off a series of emails. And at least initially, their marketing people do not seem particularly clued in as to what's going on. But it's really difficult to get information out of them, which always baffles me. Some vendors are really good at this, and some vendors, you know, they just hire two inexperienced people. And, you know, people should be, you know, thrilled about getting free PR. It seems like you're pulling teeth just to get information out of them, which is really confusing to me. But I do have a couple of questions that I really would love to see answered by these folks. The first one is I wonder how much they had to pay for that Linux.net domain name. That had to cost them a few bucks. The other thing is I'm very interested in getting my hands on the $200 PC because I'm really curious. Actually, looking at it, and unless they're going to be charging, unless they're going to be making money on some kind of a handling fee that they're not talking about. I don't know whether they're making any money on this deal. I mean, based upon the look of the case and the specifications they got printed on their website and even a modest amount of assembly dollars, at $199 for what they're offering right there, they are breaking even as far as I can tell.
Do you happen to remember what the specs are?
No, but I'm going
over there myself. So
I drilled through them in detail yesterday when they first posted the specs to their website, and I was amazed that based upon the chipset and the
I got it up here.
Yeah,
it's 1.3 gigahertz AMD processor, 128 megabytes of RAM, 30 gigabyte hard drive. That's not a bad start, that's for sure.
Yeah. And just looking at those, and because that stuff is all commodity priced, just go out to price.com and start, that's what I did yesterday, is I just went to price.com and just started making a list of all the component parts, and then did a search on motherboards with the chipset, and I came up with it was something like $163 of component parts or something like that, and then you have to assemble it,
Right.
So even if you're assembling these in China and paying some 12-year-old a dollar a day to assemble them, you still have to ship it here. And so by the time you ship it here, get everything through customs, and do the marketing, that's got to cost close to $200, damn close to $200 to sell that PC.
What do you know what Walmart is having inside their $200 box at this point? It's been a while since I looked.
It's the Microtech, but they really strip it down. Well, this is not stripped down. And Unless they've changed the specs since I looked at it yesterday, I hit a healthy amount of RAM in the system, and it was by no means a strip down box. It was a uniboard for sure, but still, I'm surprised when so many American white box manufacturers have been struggling to break this $199 barrier successfully for a long period of time, and these guys are like right out of the box offering this.
Well, this may be their way of trying to create the initial splash. You know, I keep wondering if they're going to try to do something similar to the Lindo's folks of trying to sign people up for an annual fee or update fee or something like this.
Yeah, well, that must be part of it, because they just can't be making the money. They just can't.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, it certainly seems like, as you said, for the money or for the hardware that's out there, for the money, it's not bad for sure.
Yep. No. If you just go to the Lenari website and take a look at the specs, it's a very reasonable. I have contacted folks from Lenari, and I know how difficult it is for them to pass around demo units. So I've offered to buy one just to show my support for a new vendor. I've offered to buy one if they'll send it to me. And I told them I'd really like to have it by the second week of November, if I can get it that soon, so we can actually feature it on a show in mid-November. But we'll see. Hopefully the PR people will begin to get a clue. They must be really overwhelmed right at the moment, though, with requests that a $200 PC is really... That's pretty remarkable in anyone's account. So, got any more stories?
Yeah, I got a couple more. One is a very interesting little piece on Samba. And let me pull this thing up here. Over at... VNUNet, yeah. Samba beats Windows, and it talks about how Samba 3 was tested by IT Week Labs, and they found that overall performance was roughly 2.5 times faster than Windows Server 2003. And that is pretty significant, especially since, NT... is being officially, or NT4 is officially being, de-supported by Microsoft in the near future, and there's lots of these file and print servers running around out there that are NT-based to date. Mm-hmm. So if people got to do an upgrade, it may be far less painful to go with a Samba-based server than with a new Windows 2003-based server.
Yeah, that's one of the questions I really had about the test, is it really is unclear to me on this test of the hardware that they were talking about. And the Windows Server 2003 is XP, basically, with a different name on it, hoping people will not take the time to look at the license and discover that it's just XP. But anyways, if you thought NT was bloatware, and you think 2000 is bloatware, this XP server requires a pretty hefty piece of hardware. And so from that standpoint alone, if you missize the box that you're putting 2003 server on, it's not going to function very well. And so that really is, when you're saying that there's a lot of NT servers out there, there are a lot of NT servers out there that are 350 megahertz Pentiums with 64 to 128 megabyte of RAM that are file servers in Joe Bob's print shop. And it really is. This is a huge market force for a new thing, small business adoption. something that a year ago we weren't talking about. We weren't talking about small business adoption, but it more and more things are starting to look like more markets are starting to lean towards Linux's way. Interesting story, though. I'm real surprised. When they came up with the number 2.5 times faster, it really sort of caught me off guard.
Yeah, I had heard from some people some feedback that Samba 3 was reputed to be really a barn burner. It just there were some folks who were saying there's a lot of good things in it, but I hadn't seen anything solid. And man, if this test is any way indicative of what Samba 3 is capable of, that's a real nice piece of work.
Yeah, to do this fairly, though, they really need to do this same test in a series of machines that can give a broader scope of what's going on. Broader. A lot of noise at Wrigley Field tonight. Hear it in the background. So, any more stories?
Yeah, we got one more, and that is about Linux Rescue Disks. It's the LNX BBC project, which folks may remember was originally the LinuxCare rescue project. LinuxCare Bootable Toolkit, I think, is
the bootable CD.
Yeah. So this is the post LinuxCare version of that. They've done some. This was at Linux Planet. I don't know if I mentioned that. But it's called Linux Rescue Disks Get a Kick from GAR, and it talks about the new GAR build system that they have for the project. And it's just an interesting piece in that, especially if you don't have much of a background in this. Just to see some of the things that they're doing, allowing for a customizable build of these bootable small bootable CDs, and there's a lot of really interesting uses that I don't think we've quite seen yet, although some of them are starting to appear. But being able to have these totally standalone demos and things like this, what was that? Dynabolic that I reviewed for NewsForge a few months ago. An entire distribution that just boots up off the CD, and you have a broadcast studio suddenly on your laptop or your PC. I think that when this thing comes into its own fully, we could see a lot more interesting things where it's not even a question of installing the demo. You simply plunk the CD into your machine, turn your machine on, and you have an entire working environment, which I think is quite cool.
Yeah, at least for the targeted application du jour, that's for sure. A lot of people have been talking on our local Chicago area Linux mailing list, the Loony List, talking about exactly the story in reference to firewall-based distributions on a single CD and how efficient that is likely to become in the very, very, very near time frame as a CD-delivered product, rather than even bothering with keeping hard drives running well, just base the whole damn thing on CD delivery, and when it's time to update, you plug in a CD in and let it be.
That's it. It was like, what was that? That spinoff from, who was it, Oracle, the network something or other computer that they did a few years ago, or they tried to do, where they had the entire operating system on the CD, and you just replace the CD was the upgrade. And we could see that on a more generic basis coming out of all this stuff. Could be real interesting in a lot of areas. Also, things, it occurs to me, things like kiosks could really benefit from stuff like this.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking earlier today on seeing as a IDE segment will support 4 devices rather comfortably. You could have multiple cheap CD-ROMs in a box, and have one CD with the operating system and a second CD with a filing system, and that would be a very efficient way to design kiosk-style applications. That was ironic that you mentioned that, because that's been a topic of, again, discussion on some of the lists around here recently. So, is that on your list of stories?
Yeah, that's it for me.
Well, we got a bunch more. I tell you what we'll do, though. Kevin, I got a couple of things I need to take care of, so why don't we take an early break tonight? And it's 8:25, 25 after the hour here in Chicago. Cubs are still winning, and they're best of seven series. It's the game is really heating up, and if the score changes, we will break in and let you know what this change is. But, Kevin, why don't you go ahead and put on a tune, and I'm going to get myself organized for a few more stories. I got to get my URLs lined up. I know there's 50 of you out in the IRC. And so before we go off to break, I want to tell you a couple things before we go out to break so you can think about it and maybe chat with a few people in the IRC. First one is I want to give thanks to the folks at LinuxQuestions.org for their ongoing support as being a sponsor through September and the beginning part of October. It's been real helpful to have them and their community of 35,000 registered users at LinuxQuestions.org. Jeremy and all the folks out there, no, don't worry, we'll have our spam talk. Dave from New Zealand is giving me shit. Don't worry, we'll be talking about it. But thanks again to all the people from Linux Questions. And also, keep it marked on your calendar. Not next week, but the week after is our annual, that's the 28th of October, our annual Halloween digital scavenger hunt, where we will post a series of questions about geekdom on the internet and post it at our website, and you will have the opportunity to see if you can answer these questions and win fabulous prizes. fabulous prizes. And here's the irony. In all the years we have been doing this, not once has anybody answered every question on this the trivia list for the scavenger hunt. So maybe this year, finally, we'll get somebody to answer all the questions. We make them pretty tough because the prizes are fabulous prizes. You can't just give them away. You got to make people work for them. But we will pass out a series of luxurious Linux Journal T-shirts and other such prizes to the people who at least do the best on the questionnaire. So we'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes after a break. Everybody hang in there, and we'll be right back.
And we're back.
And this is the Linux Show, broadcasting you live during the Cubs playoff game. It is presently the top of the sixth inning, and the Cubs are still winning 6-0. And they're battling it out. It's definitely a pitcher's duel. Just a few hits during the course of the game. The wind has been blowing in at Wrigley Field, so it's definitely a pitcher's night so far. But that can change very rapidly here in Chicago. At a moment's notice, the wind will change, and every other pitch will be a home run ball. So you can never tell about baseball here in Chicago. But let's go ahead and jump in onto a few more news stories, and then segment number two, which is our segment about spam. We got a lot to talk about on spam tonight. And hold your comments in the IRC till we get there. We're still trying to track down Arnie. We don't know what happened to him. But first story tonight is the Skull Road Show. For those of you who were listening to the show 2 weeks ago, we talked about the Skull Road Show, their city-to-city tour. Well, it just so happened that one of the Skull presentations was held this afternoon in Minnesota. And I have been getting email all afternoon long from various Linux folks who attended this. And as it turned out, there were seats for 64, but there was only in attendance somewhere between 12 and 20 at any given moment. There was initially somewhere close to 20, but quite a few people got up about a third of the way through the event and walked out. Conspicuously absent from the presentation they put on was a lot of detail about the lawsuit. The this has been fairly common in the roadshow events up until this date. People who are apparently able to comment have been conveniently absent from any of these meetings, you know, pleading that they're just, you know, marketing people and not qualified or authorized to comment on the lawsuit. And that is ironic when you consider that this is primarily to impress not only their channel but potential business customers about the quality of their product and the viability of their business. Of real note was the one of the people at the event who identified himself as a member of their reseller channel, but did not get the name, at least in the emails that I've gotten. I do not have the man's name. But the man asked the question after excuse me, after a number of people from SCO had been bragging about how viable and how profitable and how stable SCO had become over the last 12 months since they dumped Linux and got rid of all those Caldera Linux people, the reseller got up and he said, "Okay, well, you're so profitable. Where precisely does this profit come from?" And they sidestepped the question several times, but eventually were forced to answer that the profitability comes from their scope source division. So this reseller in the crowd asked a very poignant question that I have never heard specifically asked in the way it was asked, and that was, "What you are profitable in is not what will make me profitable as a reseller."
Yes, indeedy.
And that statement really has to be focused in on as something that has to be running through their channel ranks right now.
That's it.
The litigation will keep the white bill paid, and it will keep the stainless steel hubcaps on Daryl's BMW, but it may not do the reseller channel one damn bit of good at all. And so, again, I really thank all the people who are fans of the show who showed up to the event and sent me a corroborating email so that I could talk about this and not have it be totally hearsay. I've gotten three emails with basically the same exact quote in it. I just wish they would have gotten the guy's name. I'm trying to track the guy down because I'd love to have him on the show. And I'd love to have a verbal quote of that that we can continue to play on into the future. My next story is not a SCO story. I'm going to try and stay away from SCO. But comes from Forbes magazine. Forbes magazine article that originally Arnie clued me in on this one. And the story came out very early this morning. Story by Daniel Lyons, New York edition of Forbes. And the title of the article is Linux's Hitman. And this article is absolute pap. It is commie FUD pandering. And not surprising. We were making comments, or at least I was making comments last week, that, although it certainly looks like we're winning the PR campaign against SCO, SCO's comments, if they repeat them often enough, they have the Goebbels effect.
Yep.
That if you repeat them often enough, people start to repeat you and believe you. And although this article wasn't a SCO article per se, the author, Daniel Lyons, has bought into SCO's argument. And so he has used the excuse of the open source community picking on SCO as his motivation for focusing in on a perfectly legal and legitimate exercise of copyright by the FSF, and in particular, Bradley Kuhn. It is, very well known. It has been for a long, long time that there has been this bickering going back and forth between the legal team at FSF, if you want to call it a legal team, and Linksys. Linksys is one of the most successful small business device manufacturers in the world, generating hundreds of millions of dollars worth of revenue. So they're a big company. And here's the little, tiny, humble Free Software Foundation, okay? And this guy is berating Bradley Kuhn for the fact that how dare he exercise a perfectly legitimate copyright claim? Why is it right that it's okay for SCO to make their claim, but not for the FSF? And this is nuts. Throw up, the commie FUD, and call Bradley, comrade Bradley. It's pathetic. So this is one case without question where I think SCO's efforts at polluting the press have really worked. Could be that this guy has got his head so far up his rear end, anyways, that it's just not possible for him to see a perfectly legitimate and legal exercise of FSS's copyright on the GNU Public License. It's just crazy. It's just utterly insane. And the real corker on this article in Forbes was, how dare the Free Software Foundation have money in their treasury. is that pathetic? This is what this guy focused in on, is that because of the fact that the people like Peter Salas and Richard Stallman have run that organization on a shoestring, on an absolute shoestring, and they've done really well at cashing away money in the bank and not spending it. They've been really frugal. And lo and behold, surprise, surprise, I got to admit, I was shocked to find out that FSF has over $700,000 in the bank.
Wow.
You know, that's a lot of money. But you know what? They're going to need that when the big GNU lawsuit happens.
Yep.
They're going to need all of that money. That $1 million, it'll be lucky if $1 million, when the big battle of Microsoft versus the GPL eventually happens, that will be $1 million lawsuit. And I'm talking about $1 million for the legal fees. And so I'm glad they've been damned frugal. And I'm glad that they've caught people in gross violation of the GPL and slapped them on the wrist and got them to kick in, you know, $25,000. Come on, these companies have made millions off of using Linux.
Yep.
Millions. And so, $25,000 is the least they could do. Give me a break. This is just pathetic. And so I'm okay. All you comrades out there listening, make sure you go over to Forbes and check out Daniel Lyons, and make sure you tell them, okay, yeah, fine, Richard's a socialist, but you know what? Get a clue. Most of the people in the free software movement and the open source movement in particular are just as entrepreneurial as anybody else. They should get a clue. This guy's definitely my nomination for Clueless Pundits of the Week, without question.
Well, sounds like he does win the prize.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see, it's 8:45. We are running a little close on time, but I do want to get a couple of more of these quickies out. First of all, over on the Register, there's two really important stories on the Register. One less so than the other. I'll do the less so important one first. Israel slams the door on Microsoft. The trend continues. Major announcements from another government today. Israel, throwing the glove in Microsoft's face, saying enough's enough. We're not going to update. We're not going to go through the upgrades. Forget it. Upgrade time is over. We are not going to even consider Office 2003. And the antitrust authority of Israel has officially determined that Microsoft is an illegal monopoly. And on top of that, in response, the Ministry of Commerce has suspended all contracts with Microsoft. They have suspended all payments on existing contracts.
Wow.
And they will ban Microsoft in terms of no further purchases.
That's huge.
It's huge. I mean, this is not just a we're going to consider open source. This is a slam, major slam. Because of those of you who aren't aware, Israel is a extremely sophisticated country when it comes to IT. Some of the best software development in the world, in particular encryption, firewalls, and security software, the Israelis seem to excel in that area. So you can check that story out on the Register website. So once again, another country slams it to Microsoft. It's only a matter of time, it appears. But the other story on the Register that I've got has really been quiet. this is one of those, yeah, you'd figure that I would talk about this one. But it really has not gotten mentioned. I thought for sure this would be on Slashdot. I really did. I thought sure that this story would get Slashdot. And you know, it goes to the quality of the coverage of the Register, even though they're a UK publication. They're so well connected, and they have reporters that work the Washington market and the New York market and do a great job. And the story I'm talking about is an exclusive, actually, at the Register website, and that is that the FCC has been handed their walking papers by the federal courts, and have been told that the regulatory process that's been going on in Washington, D.C. in relation to the aggregation of cable TV companies and the corresponding lack of consideration of making those now aggregated companies responsible to the same regulatory processes as the telco companies are required to go through. It's now over. The rules have officially changed as of today. Actually, this was a quiet announcement that happened a couple days ago and has just gotten into the press today. But this is big news, folks. If you've been listening to me rant and rave over the last year about the death of the Internet, we were really in danger. Our Congress was caught sleeping. They weren't paying attention to the regulatory process going on over at the FCC. Both the Democrats and Republicans sort of turned a blind eye to it because, well, you know what? The cable companies, they donate a lot of money to campaign funds. Well, the score has just changed. Cubs are now leading 2-0, bottom of the sixth inning. So crowd's going nuts here in Chicago. But anyways, back to the story. This is really, really important. This is going to herald in a change in the way that the FCC is going to have to behave in relationship to the Internet. By putting cable companies on the same footing as the telephone industry, this is reopening the door to the mom-and-pop ISP to be able to reestablish their market in their communities. So the 10,000-some Internet businesses that are serving communities across the United States have literally been saved by five federal judges. As far as I'm concerned, the best judgment that I could have possibly hoped for in terms of intervening with what I believe is the illegal behavior of the FCC legislating without proper authority. So this is a big story. Watch for this to change. Watch for this to drive down high-speed Internet costs within the next year. I honestly believe that as the ISPs or as the phone companies and the cable companies realize that they can actually deliver better service if they let the local area ISPs back in the game, you're likely to see a significant improvement of cable delivered and DSL delivered Internet services at a much more reasonable cost. The fact of the matter is, and I know this because Kevin and I have been ISP guys for a long time, back in 1995, we were buying dark copper and delivering DSL over dark copper, and we were paying, at the time, Ameritech $6 a month for that copper pair. So we could deliver back then, in 1995, we could deliver extremely fast DSL services for $19 back then, before the legislation changed and made it impossible to do. So it's more than likely that the I see that this ruling is going to really change the entire look of the internet over the course of the next 12 months. Thank goodness. Boy, it was really looking dire for a long time there. It's 8:52. Let's get on to segment number two, even though we won't take another break. Let's talk about spam. Okay, during the break, Russ, you were saying something about spam. It sounded like a good lead-in to me. You were getting an abundance of what kind of mail?
Pharmacy-related emails. I'm getting, I don't know, probably 40, 50 pharmacy-related spams per day at my various email accounts. You know, buy your Viagra here, buy your Xanax here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's getting atrocious. I mean, it's really hard when I actually you know, I'm up till 3 in the morning doing some work, and then I get 6 hours sleep, and I log in again in the morning, and I've got this stew of spam just that has accumulated in 6 hours. It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah. It's gotten the point where I have to finally agree with Chris Perillo. For those of you who are listening, you remember Chris Perillo was on the show a couple months back, and he predicted, or he stated, I should say, email is dead. And although I sort of poo-pooed him at the time, I've been putting up with, I guess, with gritting teeth, the obnoxious behavior of the spammers, and it has impacted us just like everybody else. You know, I'm right there with you, Russ. You know, I'm getting, you know, 350 spam emails a day on an average day. I don't like filtering my mail because people send me the screwiest things, and I don't know what they're going to put as the subject line of their email. And so it seems like every time I start to filter, I miss legitimate email. And
yeah.
It just never seems to work out well for me. So I've you know, put up with it. Now, I spend the 15 minutes twice a day clicking delete. To get rid of all of the obnoxious spam. But then, about 3 weeks ago, the proverbial shit really hit the fan. You talk about spam. It started pouring down upon us in terms of volumes of spam like we had never even dreamt of before. As it turned out, by some coincidence, I would guess, or I suppose by some malicious behavior, the purveyors of a email list, you know, you've gotten the emails, you know, you send them $9 and they send you 6 million email addresses, you know, one of those.
Right.
Well, and those generally include a little SMTP application built into the list so that you could do your bulk email. And as it happens, they have had in this program a list of a couple of hundred domain names to use as the domain names for the outgoing email address. And the LinuxShow.com happened to be one of those domain names.
Oh, no.
But what would be worse? You know, hacking /dot? That would be worse. But I tell you, using the LinuxShow.com as a spam email address has ended up costing hundreds of users their internet. And the gratifying thing about this is that the old techniques, although they're a pain in the ass, the old techniques of filing abuse reports still do work with everybody except AOL. I have spent an unbelievable amount of time trying to patch this disaster. There have been days, individual days where I've had like 500 or 1,000 reflected emails bounced back at my email box saying that, some AOL mailbox is no longer functional, and so it reflects back to me as the default. I check the default box for thelinkshow.com. The gratifying thing about this is how many admins apparently listen to the Linux Show. So it's really been remarkably an interesting experience of sorts, in that if you forget all the email that I send to AOL and MSN, everybody else has been real gracious, and most of the ISPs have been not only very quickly responsive, but they've taken pleasure at writing notes to me about how they have responded and demanded that their user write me apology letters. If they don't, they're discontinuing their service. And in a lot of the cases, these are turning out to be cable connections and DSL connections that people are getting shut down from. But still, Kevin, what can be done? You've been researching this a lot lately.
Yeah, there's been, tons of stuff popping up, but the old standby spam assassin still seems to be far and away the best solution. I know I've played around with a lot of the Bayesian stuff, but I still find that there's just so much stuff that flips through that you got to train it with, that I spend far too much training, whereas a spam assassin has gotten to the point where I get zero false positives and only one or two spams actually slipping through into my email box, and I'm getting probably 65 to 100 spams a day.
That's all?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish that was the case with me. But so that's really still the best option, is spam assassin?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are really big on BogoFilter, and of course Mozilla now has Bayesian type filtering built in, but I still found that spam assassin definitely works the best with the least amount of work on my part.
Yep. One of the people in the IRC asked the question, did abuse reports ever work with AOL? At one time they did. Before AOL became AOL Time Warner, I actually had the email address for Steve Case's secretary. And if abuse@AOL.com did not respond, say, within 24, 36 hours, you could email her. And they would make sure that the abuse at AOL did respond. But ever since AOL became AOL Time Warner, they haven't given a damn. The corporate culture of their changed so radically into a broadcasting company that they didn't care. They just plain did not care. And there's really, although I did spend in the course of the last 3 weeks probably 16 hours filing abuse reports with AOL alone, it was a total waste of time. I was hoping that because of the sheer volume of abuse reports that I was sending them, that hopefully would get the point across, but it obviously hasn't. Kevin, they're asking you, did you look at enemy.mailtools.net?
No, I actually haven't seen that one.
Okay, well, check it out. Maybe we can comment on it on a future edition of the show. And this is going to be probably an ongoing thread for the next 3 or 4 weeks with me. I've decided I was so overwhelmed by the sheer magnitude of the AOL mail that I've been getting bounced at me the last week or two that I'm trying to get somebody from AOL to appear on the show. And I'm also trying to get Chris back on the show to talk to us again about his rather controversial opinion on the ISP business and see if his opinion has changed at all. So, well, I tell you, folks, we are up to the 9 o'clock hour. And I know there's only a few stories that we covered on the list tonight. Boy, can you imagine if Arnie would have actually made it, we wouldn't even gotten this far. But we're going to call it a night because, frankly, history is in the making here in Chicago. This apparently only happens here once every 60 years or so. And so seeing as the Cubs are winning 2-0 in the bottom half of the second, we're going to go ahead and shut the show down for the evening. Make sure you do come back next week. We will have a normal show next week. 2 weeks from tonight, we will have our Linux scavenger hunt, our Halloween scavenger hunt. And we'll probably set up the Jabber server that night, and rather than having a stream with Kevin and I talking, we're just going to play music that evening during the course of the show or the time that we would normally have the show, and help people out, giving people hints on the scavenger hunt. So we will be online in the IRC and probably set up the Jabber server so people can IM in music requests. And we'll put on your favorite tunes. Oh, by the way, Kevin, I found the Thrill Kill CD.
Uh huh.
So we'll have the Thrill Kill CD ready for Halloween night. That's for sure. A good apropos CD to put on. So until next week, this has been the Tuesday night edition of the Linux Show. Go Cubs! We're out of here.